Hang up and dial in with the
Blog
phone.
Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, and along with me, my co-host, Han Tron. Han, are you there?
Yes, good evening, Jim.
Excellent. We had a little bit of technical difficulty today, but we did get Han connected from down in that wonderful sunny state of Florida. Well, everyone, we'd like to welcome you to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, episode number 3. I need more ops. Do I expand or do I build new? The age-old question. We've just had an opportunity to actually solve this particular question for our business partner, Dr. Bill Hunsinger. And he came to the conclusion that it's time for him to build onto his existing facility. But with that, you know, we're really here tonight to talk about the age-old question. Let me start out with the paint a picture for you. The scenario that you have is, let's say you've expanded your hours. You've done the typical split shift. You're open Monday through Saturday. Evening hours, you've got associates working the evening, weekend hours where you work your hours that you've selected. You're basically maxed out. You're out of chair time. It's time to do something. You really need more ops. And the question is, how do you even go about it? If you go to Google or any search engine and type that kind of question in, you're going to get a menagerie of possible solutions from several different groups from around the country, all of which, in our opinion, really don't help you answer the particular question, and they give you one little aspect of the pros and cons. So tonight we'd like to really talk about the pros and cons of each one of these two possible scenarios. You've got to either remodel or you've got to expand to build a new place. Han, how many times have you had this asked to you either as a moderator at Dental Town or as the senior designer in the years that we've been doing this?
I get it pretty on a pretty regular basis, Jim. You know, it's before you can even start to answer the question, because we're dealing with a limited physical space, we need to have the detail of what is, you know, whether you own an existing building that you can physically expand, or whether you're in a lease space that you can actually physically expand. So I get this all the time, almost daily. Okay, and so, again, the question is, if you're already maxed out in your, in your clinical time, it's time to expand. How do you do this, whether you should, in your location? Let me throw a scenario out there for other consideration, too. Often, when you get to this point, you ask the question whether you can or cannot, you are in a reactive mode. If you bought a practice and you inherit a physical space that you have to work with, that's a different issue. But let's say if you're starting out a practice and planning, then this is a problem that you can solve early on. In fact, I spoke to a doctor out of Pennsylvania today, who's considering a leasing a space for 2,500 square feet and just starting out using 1,500 square feet, and whether he wants to lease the entire space or just what he needed. And again, the question is, can you afford to take on the tab for the entire 2,500 square feet so that you can have that reserve 1,000 square feet of space for future expansion, or you take the entire 2,500 square feet and design it for the final outcome with the maximum chairs that you need, and only use what you need to start out with. And I find that would be the smarter choice. So again, it's easier when you start out and plan it that way for future expansion than to approach the expansion question after, once you max out and don't have the room and don't have the option to expand.
Well, exactly. Yep. And we, obviously not everyone has the advantage of being in that position where their particular practice design allows them and was planned for future expansion. So it is a reactionary kind of situation. So you've really got three or at least two areas that you have to analyze. First of all, if you're in a lease arrangement, then you have one set of criteria and questions you're going to have to go through. And then if you're in an own situation where you physically own, then you have another. And then in that, both of those scenarios have the other option, and that other option is I need to build new. But it doesn't mean I need to build a new few ops. I need to build a new building and move to that particular new location because where I'm at doesn't make sense. So when you look at the lease option, let's say you're leasing your current space, and there is the potential that you can take on additional space beside you, lease it from your landlord, whatever particular reason it's available, then you can look at the particular numbers of what that lease is going to cost, what they're going to be able to give you in the way of potential build outs, just like you did when you leased the thing originally. And then also, what's it going to do to your term? You've got to really understand that when you go to lease this new space, it gives your current landlord the opportunity to basically tie you down for another bunch of years. And that could be another 3 years, another 5 years, another 10 years, when maybe you're in a position that you've been in your space for 8 years, you're coming up on, well, in 10 years, I'll be out of my current lease. And then I have the negotiation power to either re-up my lease and potentially expand, or maybe it's time to make that particular move. Let's go over to the next, and that's you own your particular building. Well, if you own your particular building, then you have a whole set of other options and possible issues that you have to look at. And those issues would range from everything to, do I have the physical property, square footage availability that I can actually build a new operatories, whether they're going to be hygiene operatories or whether they're going to be general practitioner operatories, it doesn't matter. It's, do you have the ability to physically build that square footage on your land? Does that mean you have to tear down something beside you? Does that mean you have to encroach into some areas that, for example, that are currently parking lot? Well, you may be able to do that, and you may not be able to do that, because if your current building was designed with just enough parking to meet the zoning requirements and just enough parking to meet your particular needs, for your practice. And that we talked about that in one of the last shows. Obviously, you need parking for your staff. You need parking for your patient load. And you need parking for the next patient who's lined up to come in after that patient. So that kind of dictates the number of parking spaces you needed. So you get into a catch-22 scenario where you're actually saying, well, I've got additional area where I can build into that parking lot. But then you take away parking. Do you have the ability to replace that parking? So there are a bunch of other questions that will be required to look into, and it has to do with things like zoning, things like do you physically, are you able to build and create a scenario where you can actually build your existing your new operatories, keep your existing operatories open, working, making money so you don't lose any revenue during this build time, and then in a very short period of time, open up that new wing or the new operatories so that you can then take advantage of those. Hopefully you have that ability, but sometimes you don't. So sometimes the decision is actually kind of made for you, isn't it, Han?
One thing you didn't mention, Jim, is that when you expand your building, yes, you may lose some parking or you have to take some parking to put the new expansion on and then replace that parking. But, however, every time that you expand the physical footprint of your building, you may be required to also add additional parking because of that addition. Okay, so they're just a whole mess of things that would occur when you look at expansion, expanding the building physically. So that's one other thing.
Yeah, and that would hold true as well for a lease space. Now, typically in a lease space, if it's in a retail center, there's already a sea of parking that's associated with that, and there's parking spaces that are associated with that already pre-built existing shell. Maybe the adjacent tenant moved out, and you're going to be taking over that existing square footage, putting your new operatories in there, and there's parking spaces that are identified and assigned with that previous next-door neighbor. And so you kind of have that issue, but it has to be checked, but it's not an issue as bad as it is, or potentially as bad as it is when you're going to be building on a piece of property that you particularly own and you have existing parking spaces. And that's just one area we're talking about is parking spaces. There are all kinds of other potential areas that need to be reviewed. And that there's things like zoning, landscaping requirements. There's things like having the ability to fit within the setbacks of your existing property. It may mean that you have the option, and if your property is laid out such that you can maybe acquire a little strip of land from your next door neighbor to allow you to do this thing. All those things have to be looked at by a professional who can evaluate the possibilities. So we always advocate that you get a professional involved as soon as possible to help you make this determination, because both options are viable options, expanding where you're at or building in a new place or building where you're at are very possible options. But then you get into the whole idea of, well, okay, it doesn't work, or it works, but it's messy, or it works and I have to shut down my practice for so many, whatever, days or weeks, all of which are financial no-nos. You don't want to do that. We always advocate that you look at this from the business side as much as looking at it from the architectural design practice side, because both have to work. Because when it comes down to it, you're in the business of doing dentistry, and you're in the business to make money. And that those operatories, whether it's hygiene or general practice, they make money. That's how you make the money for the particular practice, and you've got to keep them open. Now, the other aspect that it needs to be talked about, Han, is size. Normal size of an operatory is?
Yeah, it ranged between 8 by 11 or 10 by 11. Jim, let me step back a little bit about the lease space and retail strip. When you expand, in my opinion, you are somewhat at a disadvantage in dealing with the with the landlord, because you need space, and negotiating for the additional space and stuff like that, it's not our area of focus, but it could be a big challenge for you. It's rare that I'm participating in a lot of discussion about this expansion and so on, and I have not heard too much about from other participants that they actually assume the entire adjacent space. Let's say you only need 500 square feet for additional clinical space, basically around roughly 4 to 5 additional operatories, and your adjacent neighbor is a 1,500 or 2,000 square feet space. The landlord would rather lease you the entire space because it's a little easier for him or her than to cut a little piece out for you. We only run into the expansion scenario where it was perfect. And this case was a condo where the doctor owned his own, and then the adjacent space became available for him to purchase and expand. The area was perfect because his existing space is only 1,250 square feet, and he needs 4 more operatories. And when the condo next door became available, he purchased it. And that was just a perfect, everything was aligned in his favor. But that was, it's an ownership type of thing. But when you get into retail space expansion, it become a little more difficult to just take a small piece for your need, and the landlord look at looking at a smaller sliver, that become less attractive for the next potential tenant.
Exactly, and always if you have a question out there and you'd like to ask either myself or Han, please feel free, call in. The guest line number is 657-383-1442. And like Han always gets to say, you don't have to use your real name. We'd be glad to hear from you. And obviously, that's why we do this. We really are here to help educate, to help the decision-making process, and really to lend our expertise in what you're trying to accomplish to basically better your practice and your profession. Well, with the lease space, you brought out an important point, and whether it's you're doing a lease of an existing space that's adjacent to you, you're right. The landlords do not like to just carve off a little. Let's say you wanted one op more, 300 to 400 square feet worth. That's going to be a very difficult task to get accomplished from your landlord. They'd much rather give you off that whole adjacent space and tie you down to a much longer lease, so that it's something that they're not left over with something that's really kind of unleasable to them for maybe the next tenant, because they're in a business to keep that thing leased up. So that kind of weighs into the question, okay, I can't really expand where I'm at. I need to look maybe another point. I need to look and build a new place. The other aspect of
Jim,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Han.
Jim, in dealing with that, because sometimes you have to, whether you're in a medical office building, a commercial office building, or a retail strip, you have to ask the question. If you are looking at expanding, and there isn't, you know, the space next to you isn't available, you have to look at every possible scenario. And here's one, because we ran into this a couple of times, and it's a little bit radical, but it can work. Let's say if there is a vacant space, a spot that are comparable to the size that you're hoping to have available within the within the complex, whether it's in the medical building or in the retail strip. Never dismiss that potential or that option to relocate. You're still in the same building or the same complex, it allowed you a larger space that you need. You can still practice until it's built, but you have to do some really, really fancy negotiations so that you're not running, flipping a big tab for another rebuild or another practice while you're still running your existing. So you are relocating to a larger space, still in the same, same building, but the term of the lease and stuff like that probably could negotiate it differently, so that allow you the size of the space you need, without having to be thinking about a brand new building and or just simply work with what you have.
And we've run into that, Han. We've run into that in situations in a more urban environment where, for example, city environments like Chicago or large cities like that, where real estate is at an unbelievable premium. And really the only thing you will be doing is looking at maybe moving from one floor to another floor within that particular complex or that building, are moving from one area to another area to be able to get, extra square footage. So it varies, and it varies greatly upon how you want to look at the best solution to be able to expand. Now with the expansion side, and there's always the financial side of this. The financial side of this is you're going to be, are you financially prepared to do this? One of which is, hopefully, like you say, the scenario is you're maxed out, you've run out of chair time, and you got to do something because a new patient calls in and you can't get him into a chair for 2 weeks. Well, that's deadly when it comes to patient retention. They'll go to someone else and be able to be in position to be able to get them in sooner. So to be financially prepared, we're going to have a whole series of upcoming shows, one of which we'll be having our other co-founder, Dr. Bill Hunsinger, will be on as a special guest, and you'll be able to pick his brain, and we're going to pick his brain over the airways here to be able to talk about financially being prepared from a dentist's point of view as a businessman or a woman, that you're ready to be able to do this, and how do you best accomplish this so that you hit the ground running and are able to move forward quickly with moving into the particular new space, whether it's an expansion of where you're at or whether it's a new build moving on a new place. So let's jump into the scenario, Han, that we've gone through all the particulars. Your lease is up, or your existing facility is just maxed out. You can't build anything more. You're a dentist, and you are just trapped. I can't get patients in. I've got too much wait time. They're past that 2 week period, and I really need to do something. And so it falls into the realm of, okay, I've got to build a new place. That has a whole bunch of issues, questions, and areas that have to be addressed. You want to talk about a couple of those?
Yes. One of the big question or important question is if you are expanding, what is the maximum amount of time that you can afford to shut down? That was always a biggie. The other is, I often use this analogy that the design, the construction, particularly construction, it's a major disruption to your practice. You know, besides the noise, the dust, an army of people, extra parking, and all that stuff. I use this analogy that it's going to be a pain in the butt. It's a headache. Do you want to stretch it out into multiple little phases or little headaches, or just bite the bullet and do it all at once? That's a question that only you as a business owner can answer. We certainly can strategize how everything can be done, whether it's to be in pieces or in one large, you know, execution. So it's important that you consider if you are looking at to expand how you can pull it off in whether in one shot or multiple phases. And we have done both. But again, it is a big decision for most of our clients because it will affect their business. We had done project where it is phased in a way that I think it's kind of lucky that it just happened that during the major holiday, the dentist took a long vacation that allowed the practice to be shut down, tied together, and then the construction continued. When he came back, he still can work, and everything else, can be put together before the merge of the two practices. So there's a lot of planning involved. It will affect, it doesn't affect your schedule, but it affects your money as well, because the longer you stretch it out, the more it costs. So then, Jim was saying earlier, Dr. Hunsinger is looking to expand his building. Typically, we see costs in construction costs for new construction run around high 200 to about 300, give or take. This particular expansion, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to run past over $400 per square foot, isn't it, for bills?
Yeah, actually, the exact number hasn't been defined, but it is something that is going to be higher than the normal. And the numbers that Han, that you just used as an example, vary from area to area and
yes,
region to region around the country. And our associate, Mike Montgomery over at Live Oak Bank, has a great network. I believe we've mentioned him before, and he's going to be on an upcoming show as an interview. We'll be able to pick his brain about this aspect of what he does. But he has the capability to be able to tie in with over 750 contractors across the country that they've worked with that will be able to give us more of a real-time estimate on what cost per square foot will be, even on expansions. And Han, what you were just describing was expansion is not the new build yet. Expansion to your existing space. Expansion to your existing space will cost more than typically we've seen that it costs more than buying something new, building a new building, for example. And it basically has to do with the idea of size. You get, you've got to mobilize your contractors. You've got to mobilize the crews out there. That all takes time. So for them to build a couple operatories at, six or 700 square feet, they're already out there. If they're already out there and mobilized in a new project, in a new build, you don't have to pay that cost if you're going to, you can spread it out over, you know, let's say you want to do a 10 operatory building. So the costs kind of come down per square footage or per operatory because of the economy of scale. So if, you know, if you decide that, all right, we've already got past the idea that I can't really remodel, I can't shut my practice down, I don't have the ability to expand for whatever reason where I'm at, and I've got to move into the new build. Well, obviously, the new build aspect of it is you have a whole lot of decisions that you're going to have to be, that you're going to have to start to make, and that is, what kind of quality do you want your new build to be like? Well, first of all, you got to make a decision of where is the new build going to be. So everything
from
the site.
How far away from it?
Yeah, exactly. The site acquisition, having to do with the property, getting the property tied down, go through all that costs associated with that. So say, all right, this is where I'm going to put the new practice. Now, you may say, well, I'm going to build a second practice, not a replacement practice. So that is an option, and that's actually a very viable option. You may say, okay, let's take the staff. Let's set up the scenario where the doctors are able to cover two practices now as opposed to one practice. And maybe you can do like our Dr. Bill does, and he goes between two practices depending on his schedule. So he's in both places, one place one day of the week and the other place another day of the week. They're close enough apart. He doesn't mind to make the travel. And gets a continuity within the practice. And that might be an option that works for you. You might say, you know, I've really gotten to the point where I need to get another four or five ops. Well, maybe that means another location. And as opposed to, no, I want to leave my current location and move into a totally brand new building. Both of those ideas and options need to be looked at with your plan, with the, go back to our podcast from last week, having to do with your team, to be able to sit down with your team and be able to make the decision of, yes, this is what I need to do and how I want to accomplish it. And then you can go through those steps to be able to say, all right, we'll start the design process. We'll go through, we'll create the necessary schematics to be able to get an idea from the construction entity of what this cost is going to be. And then you can, you know, move forward with the either new office location or the second office, new office location. You have areas that have to deal with is staffing. Staffing is another whole idea because you're going to have to now staff two locations as opposed to one. If you're going to do a second location, if you're not going to do a second location, you're going to move the whole practice over. Then you got the idea, okay, what about the move? We've got to really schedule that and so that it's seamless and there isn't a big lag time between when you close the doors in your existing practice and open the doors in the new practice. We like to set it up so that it's Friday afternoon. You shut your doors maybe early if you work half a day on Friday. And by Monday morning, you're seeing new patients in your new location. That's the perfect scenario. And it is possible. We've done it, haven't we, Han?
Yeah. Yes, we have. Jim, that, you know, that is a, you know, the satellite office nearby, a few miles, certainly will resolve you know, clinical space requirement. But it's it should be thought out carefully, so that you don't, you know, don't multiply your management issues. But it certainly is a viable option.
Well, exactly right, because you're looking at two of everything. You need two sterilizations.
Yeah.
You need two, you know, two labs. You need two, literally two of everything that support those additional operatories. So you got to weigh that against, okay, does it really make sense to do two of them? Will I be able to expand my potential client sphere to be able to get more clients because I've got two locations? We all know patients don't like to travel. They want to basically be as close as possible. Everybody wants to park by the front door and have a covered parking space to be able to get to your front door. So to be able to say, okay, taking your practice and breaking it into two satellite locations, or one main and another satellite location, has that advantage to be able to expand that sphere of potential client base. But you're right, Hod, it's exactly true. You've got two of everything. And those two of everythings are expensive.
Jim, actually, those are the same, basically the same question we ask when we expand in the same location, okay? Because sometimes they depend on the layout of the existing office. You may not be able to cleanly blend them together so that they function like it's a single practice that was designed like that from originally. So sometimes you have two sets of equipment because it's the cleanest way to do things to expand the facility. Of course, you have to work with the limitation that you have at hand. But again, when you look at the whether to expand or to move, the question, the exercise you should go through is the feasibility of whether it can be pulled off successfully, whether it financially makes sense, and that way, and then you can make the decision whether to stay, expand, or to pack and go and build new.
Exactly. And again, go back to last week's podcast having to do with the team, because all those team members are going to be vital in helping you to make the determination of, am I really able to do this? How can I do it? That core team is going to be crucial as you begin this thought process of, well, do I build, expand where I'm at, or do I build a new location? Is it a satellite location, or do I build a totally new facility and move everything over there? Here's another coordination nightmare that we've run into before. Obviously, your existing practice has, each operatory has its core pieces of equipment, including the chairs. Now, that equipment needs, let's say that you own that equipment and you want to take it with you. Well, there needs to be time set in the schedule so that that equipment can come out of the existing place that you have and move to the new place, installed, connected, and hooked up and ready to go for when you open the doors on Monday. Sometimes it's not an easy task.
The big one, Jim.
Yeah, that's a big one.
The big one is the pan unit.
Exactly.
It's not like your chair where you can take from one facility to the next, plug it in, and hook up all the tubes and what have you. Some of your equipment need to be tested, calibrated, inspected, and certified. And one of them is your panoramic machine. Again, time and scheduling and coordination done appropriately and timely would allow you to have a smoother transition from whether expansion into a new space or move into a new space, because it's it would be a nice surprise, or should I say a rude surprise, to find out that you had moved everything, you're ready to go, but you can't use your pan unit because it had not been calibrated, but it had not been certified.
Exactly. And we'll talk more about having the right kind of construction entity as part of your team in one of our upcoming episodes here, because the core of this is that construction entity needs to really understand dentistry and how you work and how these pieces and parts have to work together so crucially, because you can't just go through life doing, you know, two or three days worth of, well, I don't have this piece of equipment up and running, but I'm going to try to, you know, struggle my way through it. No, that's not how it works. Dentistry needs to have everything functioning. You know, you have to have it working and functional so that you can do what you need to do with your patients. It'd be like trying to, you know, build a building with only one arm. It's impossible. You really need to have all of your equipment up and running and functional, like you say, tested and certified, everything from your pan to having all your certifications in place, things like med gas and all that stuff up and ready and going, so that you can physically open those doors on Monday morning and seamlessly jump into the new practice. What other issue have you found, Han, when it comes to the new build transition between old place to new place?
I find some of the challenge, or should I say more challenging things that we need to coordinate is mainly the equipment from the client. You know, the building, the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, all that stuff is the easy part. You know, our engineer can handle, you know, their discipline, the basic building stuff quite easily. The moving part that we often don't have control over is the type of equipment that our client buy, or the information flow pertaining to the equipment. 'Cause if you have existing equipment that you're going to move over, then that's fairly easy, as long as either you have somebody catalog it and provide that to you. Usually that would be your supplier. If you buy new equipment and the supply house will help, you know, you're going to buy from the supplier of the equipment companies. And then they may have the incentive to help gather the rest of the information. But if you're buying it from multiple sources and stuff like that, it takes the incentive away from them, and it ends up a task that falls on your shoulder to perform, or on your design team, like the architecture, the architect on your project to do. And most of the time, they're not equipment specialists. It becomes a major task for them to try to coordinate that stuff. Most, if they're well versed or experienced in the working with dental offices, they have a good a good sense of confidence and knowledge to take care of that task. But when they have to take care of the equipment details and stuff, then it takes them away from the task of handling everything else pertaining to the building. So I find that the biggest challenge is the equipment, the pieces and parts, where they come from, who is responsible for them, who's going to install. Some of the scenarios that I've run into that our client are not aware of is, let's say they're going to buy, a set of cabinets or delivery units from a vendor that give them a break in pricing and so on, and it's going to be shipped to the site. It's not going to the traditional equipment supplier, whether it's Schein, Benco, or Patterson, but it goes, basically coming in through the mail. The question is, who's going to be there at the job site to accept the delivery? Who's going to coordinate the delivery? Who's going to install it once they get there? Who ultimately will be responsible for it? Those are the common questions that we often ask when we encounter those scenarios. And the answer that we typically get is, I haven't thought about that. okay, it would be, and it did happen, where we have six pallet of equipment delivered to the job site, and the job site is not ready to accept it. And so you have six pallet of equipment that's brought into the building that need to be worked around. So coordination is just a huge, major endeavor, whether it's handled by your GC or handled by your equipment people, or it's handled by you, the owner, or handled by your architect. But it got to be handled by somebody, and that had to be established early on. Otherwise, it would be a hot potato to to juggle. So equipment is the area.
And that leads to that nasty word called change order. Change order, for those that don't know what that is the request from your construction entity for additional funds to do something, whether it's changing a particular location of an electrical service or a water service to a chair location that wasn't in the right place, but because the existing equipment that maybe you're moving over or the used equipment that you bought didn't have the specific technical specifications as to exactly where it was at. Well, the contractor says, well, I never knew that that was where it had to be. I put it into the floor where we typically would put it, and now that it's in there, I have to change it. So he's going to ask for more money. Then you're stuck with that age-old problem. You're three-quarters of the way through the project with this contractor. You basically get stuck having to negotiate and most likely pay large funds to make changes, which really should never have had to happen if you would have had that coordination that Ton talks about done up front. You would then be able to save yourself all of that headache and financial hit to the pocketbook. It's got to come from somewhere. It's either going to come from your contingency, if you have one, or it's going to come out of your checkbook, both of which hurt. It's much better to do to have it planned for and properly placed in the construction documents to say, contractor, you're responsible for doing this, if that's who you want to say it. Or equipment supplier, if you're having some equipment, you take on the responsibility of making sure that it's coordinated in the right location. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, in the designing, I mean, of course, there's always something that all of us forget. And, so the earlier you can discuss about your plan, let's simply say you go to a conference and you saw a microscope and you go, that I can add to my practice. I've been wanting to have that. You should relay that information to your design team as quickly as you can, because those pieces of equipment, the question is it going to be mobile on wheels that you take from room to room, because you can only afford to buy one or want to test out one? Or is it going to be, your future plan is you're going to have a several surgical suite that you're going to mount one in each suite in the ceiling. So that way, when the facility is being designed, the infrastructure to mount those new or future technology can be taken into consideration. Because once once everything is put in place and you say, by the way, I'm going to buy a microscope and I'm going to put it right there, right above the, by over on the side of the chair. And now your construction and your design team would say, well, that means we have to move that light fixture. That means we have to remove that bulkhead. That means that we have to open up the ceiling and we have to put in a support structure. And how much does it weigh? How big is it? How much swing? All those things that all you hear is money. being printed. Okay, so, and it's usually you that's going to have to pay the tab. So it's best to plan so that's part of the project rather than to pay for it more than is necessary down the road in change order. Because change order usually costs you more, not less.
Exactly. And we don't want to create a scenario where we're laying out that this is, oh my gosh, it's the worst possible thing you could do, is to either renovate or is to expand or to build new. It can be done. It can be done very seamlessly. It can be done very well with the right design team, with the right team by your side, to be able to sweat all those details so you as a dentist can focus on dentistry. You can focus on your patients and let groups like ourselves deal with those technical issues to be able to give you what you're trying to accomplish. But it is crucial that there is ultimate coordination and communication between all the core team members so that you have all of these kind of little things done before construction happens, whether it's a renovation, whether it's a addition, or whether it's a new build. It's crucial. Without that, you do open yourself up to a whole lot of possibilities of extra costs. If you would like to learn more about this subject and a whole bunch of others, you can always go to our website, www.hjtdesign.com. There's just a wealth of information there to be able to go over everything plus more of what we talked about tonight. Obviously, if you have a question in the last, we've got about 10 more minutes to our show here tonight, you can call in at 657-383-1442, and we'd be glad to answer your question on the air. The other aspect, I think I did mention that a few of our upcoming episodes, next week's episode is going to be regarding designing the office. Who does what? Really, what do you expect from your architect, from your designer, and from your equipment company? So we're going to go through that in depth as to what those three entities should provide to you and how it fits into the overall process. With that,
that'll
I'd
be
like
the fun
to,
stuff.
Yeah, that'll be fun stuff. With that, I'd like to open it up to Han in regards to what's been happening on Dental Town last week. What was one of the hot topics?
There was an interesting discussion, namely on. Oh, I thought it was interesting because it's kind of relatively a new topic for me. Work surfaces, your work counters. No, I'm not new to the topic in work counters. I have a great idea, and I probably can talk to you until your ears fall off about it. But the material copper was brought up as a possible material for for your sterilization work surface. And it was expressed that because copper has antimicrobial qualities, I thought what's interesting is that often when I think of work counter, if you want to go to the bulletproof material, you go to stainless steel. Okay. Now we are talking specifically your sterilization area, so you're not talking about doing something that our current HGTV hot material granite. I've always thought that you can take stainless steel and form it, shape it, just like what you see in kitchen setup. You know, it's very durable, very easy to clean. You can make it almost as long as you want to without seam, because you can weld the seam and grind it down and all that stuff. So that would be the material that I would go to if I want to make it more industrial, more durable, other than plastic laminate and possibly solid surfaces. but copper was an intriguing material. The only thing that I can think of is cost. You know, why do people don't use copper for work surfaces is, or copper, period. It's because of cost. But the antimicrobial was intriguing. Jim, you work with copper quite a bit. Have you encountered or run into work surfaces like, you know, where you prep food or you do sterilization, such as, you know, in the lab, where copper is used as a work surface?
Actually, yes.
What would be? Yeah,
there has been a bunch of studies in the medical field having to do with keeping things sterile. And this all came out from the, you remember the issues they were having in hospitals where people were going in and getting those, I believe it's called SARS. And it was, they were trying to determine how best to keep that germ, that bacteria, at bay once they were able to, you know, clean and sterilize an area. And there was a big report and study done on it having to do with copper cladding of things all the way to keyboards and mouses. Copper cladding on toilet fixtures, handles, faucet handles, the little carts that you would eat your lunch or dinner on in a hospital, having a thin copper cladding on it. And the study came about, and I don't have that information off the top of my head of where it was from, but I can always pull it up and we can put it on our website. Because I know I saved it because there was a whole complete webinar that I went through on that. And it was just fascinating that there's something inherently healthy about copper. It has this built-in ingredient, and I believe it has something to do with the electromagnetic pulses that are part of that material that actually kills the microbial germs faster. They live shorter periods of time on a copper cladded surface. So they were looking at how could they clad all the pieces and parts, you know, for example, in a ICU room or in a step down room or even an urgent care patient room. So looking at it for things like your sterilization, looking at it for things like your surgical suites or even your operatories, for example, that your supply counter, all the things where you want to obviously keep them clean. But if this has an inherent cleanliness to it and has the ability to fight off and destroy those germs even more than with your procedures of cleaning do, then it's worth looking at. Now, as Hans stated, copper is not the cheapest material in the world, nor is stainless steel, for example. That's why a lot of people go with solid surfaces or those kind of things, because they're more cost effective. But if you can maximize their location to reduce your issue of bacteria and uncleanliness, then they're obviously a potentially a very useful as well as an attractive solution. And this copper is not copper that is coated with a lacquer to make it look shiny and stay shiny forever. This is raw copper that is left to age. That's what they're talking about. So it will be like your penny in your pocket. Over time,
yeah, that was the two big questions that I had in mind when the topic was brought up, is because, you know, we in our mind we live in a perfect world, we want that copper to be, that copper surface to be shiny till eternity without having to do anything to it. And so to, you know, the patina on the copper is not for everyone, okay? So if you leave it raw, then it, the inherent characteristical quality that we're looking for will perform accordingly. But if you seal this, the surface, then that's a mute issue, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you basically destroy its ability to be antibacterial. It has to be left raw, and it will age in color. It because its interior is what we're talking about, it's never going to turn that beautiful kind of bluish green.
Green.
That comes from the acids that are in the environment exterior. So, and usually left by itself, it'll take up to 40 years to do. So it'll never go to that point, but it will turn like a penny. You know, it'll darken. It will show fingerprints. It's crazy. Copper's a wonderful, it's actually very alive kind of material. You're right. I love it. In my, you know, my other life where I like to play with metals, and in my artist side of me, copper is just a wonderful material to work with. You can do so much with it. And just like stainless steel, you can weld it. You weld it with copper so that you can get seams that are all copper, the whole seamless kind of product. It can be, you can create just about anything with it. And it's a very, very malleable kind of metal. But yeah, it does have a cost associated with it, and then the ability for some people to do it. There's not a whole lot of people out there that work in that copper venue to be able to pull this kind of stuff together. But there are some. And, yeah, you're right. It's an interesting and also, like you say, very attractive. We used it in one of our projects here down in Findlay for one of our dentists. And she just loves it. It just ages beautifully and has that kind of quality that doesn't go out of style. It's not trendy.
Yeah, and we had under, or should I say, we put over the top and covered the top of our conference table with it, and artificially chemically patina. It looks wonderful. I was quite intrigued because, you know, usually the word copper normally don't come up on any topic because it costs so much. Most of our clients look at it and go like, how much do you ask for your fees? And on the same breath, you wouldn't hear them go, I want to clad everything in my building in copper. Okay, because they look at how much, you know, how little money they need to put into the building to get what they want rather than how much. I mean, so here's a public service announcement. We would be happy to do your project cladded in copper. That would be a nice challenge.
Just an example, the last roll of copper that I bought was a 250-foot long roll of 20-gauge copper, which is a pretty substantial thickness. It's thick enough that you could use as a countertop, for example, with a backing underneath of it. And it was 24 inches wide, and I believe 2 years ago it was $1,500 just for the material. So that gives you an idea of what the costs are like. And that it's just like any metal, any precious metal, it changes on a day-to-day basis. So, interesting,
like
very
you
interesting.
Say, like you say, it's probably not a material that you can simply give to any local counter fabricator to do.
No.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah,
you got to have some expertise in dealing with that. Well, with that, we are at the end of our episode tonight. And as always, we'd like to say if you'd like more information, please go to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Or if you'd like to contact us after the show or sometime during the day, you can get us at 1-866-213-1268. And I know Han and I were both excited about doing all this. Just real quick, I'd like to share with everyone that has a chance to listen to these. We get feedback from our provider for this internet radio service, and we are now covering areas in the United States, in Norway, in Austria, in India, and Han, we just hit New Zealand yesterday. So,
fantastic.
It is an international show, if you want to look at that. So it's exciting. We hope we're being helpful to be able to have this information out there and available to you. Feel free to go to our website, and if you've missed an episode, you can download the podcast. And with that, I would like to sign off, say look forward to hearing and speaking with you next week. Han?
Have a good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon. Good night.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.